Translation. Being cheated by them. The living entity in the forest of the material world tries to give up the association of these so-called yogis, swamis, and incarnations and come to the association of real devotees. But due to misfortune, he cannot follow the instructions of the spiritual master or advanced devotees. Therefore, he gives up their company and again returns to the association of monkeys, who are simply interested in sense gratification and women. He derives satisfaction by associating with sense gratifiers and enjoying sex and intoxication. In this way, he spoils his life, simply indulging in sex and intoxication. Looking into the faces of other sense gratifiers, he becomes forgetful and thus approaches death. Wow. Okay. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes a foolish person becomes disgusted with bad association and comes to the association of devotees and brahmanas and takes initiation from the spiritual master. As advised by the spiritual master, he tries to follow the regulative principles. But due to misfortune, he cannot follow the instructions of the spiritual master. He therefore gives up the company of the devotees and goes to associate with simian people, who are simply interested in sex and intoxication. These are so-called spiritualists. Those who are so-called spiritualists are compared to monkeys. Outwardly, monkeys sometimes resemble sadhus because they live naked in the forest and pick fruits. But their only desire is to keep many female monkeys and enjoy sex life. Sometimes, so-called spiritualists seeking a spiritual life come to associate with Krishna conscious devotees, but they cannot execute the regulative principles or follow the path of spiritual life. Consequently, they leave the association of devotees and go to associate with sense gratifiers, who are compared to monkeys. Again, they revive their sex and intoxication, and looking into one another's faces, they are thus satisfied. In this way, they pass their lives up to the point of death. Omagyan timarandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam jena tasmai shri guruve namaha mukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate girim yad kripatamaham vande shri guru nina taranam shri rupa shri sanatana bhataraguna shri jiva gopal bhata rasa raguna Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Narati Swaparantikam Namo Mahabharanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratvishe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gauramye Radhe Vrindavanishwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Tavasmi radhika natha karmana manasa hira Krishna gante tavai vasmi ubhame vagatir mama Govinda valabe radhe partehe tamaham sada Tvariya iti janatu govindo mantaya saha Radhe vrindavana dishe karuna mritavahini Kripaya nija padaja dasyam mahyam pradiyatam.
Tvayavasmi, tvayavasmi, najivami, tvayavina, itivigayade vitvam nayamam charanantikam. Vanchakalpatarubhyascha, kripasindubhyaivacha, patitanam bhavanebhyo, vaishnavebhyo, namo namaha.
So in this verse, we're reading about the wanderer or the traveler in the forest of material enjoyment, the forest of the material world, who takes shelter of so-called gurus, swamis, and spiritualists, who, rather than teaching about bhakti and our eternal relationship with Krishna, which life is supposed to be directed towards reviving as an eternal relationship, they give another form of sense gratification under the guise of spirituality. It's again materialism. A different form of materialism. Rather than working 9 to 5 and trying to get the flash car and the big house, and they will say, oh, that's illusion, that's Maya. What is it? It's just social perception, it's entanglement, it stifles your own growth, inner growth and progress. It shackles you emotionally, spiritually murders you. So then they will advocate another type of life, a life of freedom, a life of not trying to become prosperous or successful in the material world by common social standards, a life of freedom. And that is freedom to enjoy sex and intoxication without the social pressures of modern society. And that is called as spiritual. It is labeled as spiritual. Yes, we are very free. We're not bound up by the social conventions of this modern materialistic society. They're all so greedy. They're just about money. We're very free. We don't need to have our pretty little house and our pretty wife or handsome guy according to modern social conventions. We're free to enjoy life without these man-made conventions of what normal means. Yeah, we have our social standard of what it means to be a normal, decent human being. And they are created by different times in history. You have a different version of what it means to be normal. But at all times in history, there is a pressure for everyone to be normal. And if you are not, if you don't conform to that standard norm, you are socially deviant. Or you can even be labeled as crazy. You're crazy because you're not fitting to the norms of that society. And if you happen to live at a different time, you might be normal. But because you're at this particular time in history, you don't fit the statistical average norm, then you're labeled as crazy, and the psychology is about making deviance normal again. The prison institution is about making deviance as normal again. The criteria in psychology is called DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual. Statistics is about norms, yeah? Average. So you have a diagnostic statistical manual of different forms of deviation, then you can categorize people. Crazy, crazy, crazy. They're not fitting to the norm according to our statistical manual of normalcy. So, pushing against the norm is about greed. The norm is about working very hard to be so-called successful, because what is promoted in our society is consumerism. We measure our national success based on
GDP,
gross domestic product. We measure our success nationally based on whether the economy is expanding. If it's expanding, then politicians are happy, business people are happy, the media is, you know, touting the glories of the government, the country, because the economy is expanding. And so, as a decent citizen, your basic social obligation, your social duty, is to keep that economy expanding by working very hard and purchasing very hard, being a good consumer. As long as you're a good consumer, then you are, and basically that's what education trains us to be. That's what the media teaches us to be. Basically, our society is directed towards creating good, healthy consumers. So consumption needs to be based on desire. You need to want things. Yeah? And so, if you have uncontrolled desires, you will consume more. You will work harder. And so, that's what it means to be normal in our society. And if you can get married, then your needs will expand to a greater extent. So that's also better for the economy, better for society. The family is the basic block, the basic unit for society, for the economy. As soon as you marry, then you need a home, you need facilities, fridge, car, washing machine, and all of these other. You have weekly bills, electricity, water, and so on and so forth. You can have, 20 brahmacharis living in the ashram using one washing machine. Okay, I think you have two there. Two washing machines and, two dryers, and, that's shared with the Mataji's as well. So between 30 people, you have, two washing machines and two dryers. And how many showers do you have up there? Four? Three. Okay, three showers between 20 guys. And so that's what you need for single people. But, 20 brahmacharis get married, then you need 20 washing machines, 20 dryers. How many cars does the temple have? Two. Three. Three cars. Get married, you need you need 20 cars. And so that's good for the economy. It grows the economy. Now, previously in society, families, they lived as, a family was not nuclear. Nuclear family means one father, one mother, and some kids. Generally two. That's our modern way of doing things. But traditionally, a family meant grandparents, uncles and aunties, children, that means nephews, cousins, all living together in one house. A family meant 50 people, 40 people. You still have it in India to some extent. But by breaking families up into smaller units, it's also better for consumerism. Whereas previously, just as we're giving the example of the brahmacharya, even within a family, if 50 people live together,
You need fewer things. But if you break those families up into nuclear, husband-wife units, then there's much more need there. You need more housing, more cars, and more of everything. And so the way the tax law is in India, it's actually directed towards breaking up these big families and making them into smaller units. You're penalized for having a larger household according to Indian tax law. You might think that you will save money and by having smaller units, although you actually end up spending more in the long run. So basically that's what it means to be normal in society, yeah? That's the way our normal society is directed. It's all about economic efficiency. Discipline and growth. And as a side comment, if we base our national success as a country on how much we're growing our economy, how much can you keep growing? The resources of the earth are finite. Growth means we need more power, more energy, and we extract that energy from the earth, basically oil, coal, and so on. But the calculations is that if we keep growing, if all of us, all of the countries of the earth, this is just a side comment, keep growing our economies at the rate that we are now, within 40 years, those resources will no longer be, they will not be able to support our populations. And so then, scientists, they're looking for alternate forms of energy, let's say nuclear energy. But if you do the calculations, we're skeptical about it to begin with, but if you do the calculations, the number of nuclear power plants that would be required to support the economy and the growth as at its present rate is, if we started building them now, we wouldn't be able to, it's a ridiculous number of nuclear power plants that would be required. So these are problems that we have with this current paradigm, this current normal paradigm. So people who see through the paradigm, they want to get out of it. They don't want to be a part of it. So then they might do what's being described here in this verse. They look for a spiritual alternative without actually having spiritual knowledge. They see the problems with a materialistic greed and how that makes prisoners of people in our societies, and how it makes a prisoner, it's destroys the soul of the human being as an individual, it destroys the earth as well. So then they seek an alternative living, a more spiritual way of living. But because they don't have spiritual knowledge, they take to another form of materialism. The philosophy is of freedom. I mean, what Prabhupada's describing here is pretty much the hippie culture. The philosophy is of freedom. And therefore they think it's spiritual, but it is in fact, it's another form of materialism centered on sex and intoxication. So in taking intoxication, there is an experience that allows one to see the world very differently. It allows one to see oneself very differently. So they think of that as being spiritual. This outer-worldly experience, this outer-worldly vision. I haven't taken intoxication, but I've heard what the experience can be. And I know that, in fact, many older generation devotees, taking intoxication once or twice was the beginning of a spiritual journey for them. We're not advocating intoxication here. But for them, just having that experience, being able to see an alternate reality gave them a sense that there is something else. And it led them to on a journey which ultimately, by their good Sukriti and by the mercy of the Sukriti created for them by devotees, they were able to come to Krishna consciousness. Mm. So the freedom to indulge in sex and the freedom to indulge in intoxication, it's thought of as something very spiritual. And if you go to the to northern New South Wales, you can meet many people, right, Steve? You can meet many people living in communes or, you know, different, between Moolambah and Byron Bay. you can meet many people living in communes or communities or living, you know, in the forest, living in a shack. Very simple life. And very, very much detesting this modern, materialistic way of living. And living in a very simple, close to nature way of living, but very much centered on intoxication and so freedom to take an intoxication and sexual freedom as well. And thinking it to be something very spiritual. Prabhupada compares it in his purport, well, actually the verse itself compares it to the monkeys. The specific Sanskrit word there is vanara. So a vanara is technically half, something between monkey and human. But in his purport, Prabhupada says the monkeys, they live very close to nature, they live in nature. They live naked, even as a child. Because I grew up in Moolambah, part of my childhood, growing up in Moolambah. So I remember going to some event to chant with the devotees as a child, some kind of gathering in the area, and everyone was walking around naked, and it shocked me. some kind of spiritual, very spiritual event. Very close to nature, very much against the materialistic norms of our society, you know, the Gucci suit or dress or Armani this or, you know, Calvin Klein that. They walk around naked. But the idea is that this is very spiritual. The Prophet's saying it is like monkeys. Monkeys, they are in the forest, they go naked. And they have sexual freedom. Social convention restricts the number of sexual partners we can have. Yeah, we enter into a marriage and we're restricted. One husband with one wife. So we want to rebel against that and let us have free love. That's a term that was, and I guess still is used, free love. Don't be inhibited. Enjoy and express yourself, express your own feeling. Walk around naked, have many sexual partners, take intoxication, see an alternate reality, and live in a very spiritual way, free of artificial laws, artificial artificial conventions or modes or even products. Live a very natural and spiritual way as God intended us to. That's the basic idea. But here in the Bhagavatam, this is rejected, not as spiritual at all. It's not spiritual. It's another form of materialism. Where is Krishna in all of that ideology and philosophy? Krishna is conspicuous by his absence in that rhetoric. So, to some extent, basically, our modern way of living is very passionate. passion and ignorance. And then that alternative that is advocated is maybe a mix of goodness and ignorance. But it's still within the material plane. Krishna is missing there. Where is the sacrifice that is made? Bhakti yoga is about making sacrifice. We sacrifice ourselves, we sacrifice our lives, we sacrifice our words to Krishna. We make that as an arpana, as an offering to Krishna. Yat karoshi rajnasi yashohosi dadasya. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you give away, whatever austerity you perform, Krishna's madarpanam, do that for me. So it's another form of materialism. And therefore, Prabhupada's saying here that the Bhagavatam is saying that the gurus who advocate this way of living or this alternative to the normal materialistic way of life are cheaters. Bhagavatam says they are cheaters who cheat people. People in society who have some realization. What am I doing here? What is the purpose of all of this consumerism and growth and self-sacrifice to get more money and things? This is crazy. So someone has that insight, and then these cheaters, spiritual leaders, who send them on this other path towards intoxication and sex and this alternative life, life of simplicity, Bhagavatam is saying that they are cheaters. That is the false guru. We are warned against the false guru, who is only interested in followers, their own, increasing their own following and power, and actually not interested in the spiritual growth of their misdirected followers. In Krishna Leela, we have the story of Putana. Putana, the Kechari, the witch. She had mystic powers. So she was a witch in the true sense. She would she liked to drink the blood of newly born children. We have that in Western folklore. Dracula liked to drink the blood of others in order to maintain his own beauty and youth. That was his idea. So similarly, Putana, her favorite, most delectable form of nutrient was the blood of newly born children. And she would kidnap babies. So she was an associate and a friend, a colleague of the king of Mathura named Kamsa. And Kamsa was trying to devise different means to kill Krishna. He sent different demons to Vrindavan. So one of the demons that he sent was Putana the witch. And she assumed the guise of a gopi, a cowherd's womb. A cowherd's woman of Vrindavan. And she was the most beautiful gopi anyone in Vrindavan had ever seen. As she made her way, as she made her way towards Nanda and Yasoda's palace, people looked at her and were astonished by her beauty, by her grace, by her smile. She looked so loving, so compassionate. And they commented to one another, "Who is this gopi? So gorgeous. We haven't seen her before. Maybe she is the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi herself, come here to earth to see Nanda and Yasoda's child. Because that child is so wonderful, so beautiful, why would not Lakshmi come to see him?" And so, because they were so enamored by her beauty and her grace and she looked so kind and loving, nobody said anything. She just walked right into Nanda and Yasoda's palace. Not only did she look harmless, she looked beneficent. So nobody questioned. "Oh, come, welcome. Come in." Right into Nanda and Yasoda's palace and then into Yasoda's own bedroom. So there has to be a lot of trust. Firstly, to let someone into your home, there is some trust. To let someone into your bedroom, even more trust. She walked right in, right over to the cot where Krishna was sleeping, or resting, pretending to sleep, with his eyes quarter open. And she picked Krishna up and began to nurse him with her breast. Unbeknownst to any of the Brajabasis, she had, prior to coming into Raja, she had smeared her breasts with poison. Most evil, cunning plot to kill Krishna. She had smeared her breasts with poison. Obviously, as the Supreme Godhead, Krishna, he knew this. And so as the nipple of Yasoda's breast was pushed into his mouth, he began to suck. He sucked her poison, he sucked her breast milk, and he sucked further, and also sucked in her prana, her life air. Sucked out her life air. He knew that this putana, she is a sword in a decorated case. This, the sword in ancient times, it would come in a very beautiful case, velvet or silk, with jewels and gold and embroidery. So putana was like that, silk and gold and embroidery, but inside she's a dagger. She's a sword. And so Krishna, he sucked her breast milk, but not only, he sucked out her life air as well. As a child, we had a little nursery rhyme we used to sing. She was a sword in a decorated case because of the poison upon her breast. She was a demon, Krishna could tell. So he sucked out her breast milk and her life air as well. We had lots of little Krishna nursery rhymes that we would sing. So he sucked out her life air, and as he sucked out her life air, she was no longer able to maintain her beautiful gopi form. But rather her real form, her terrifying form as a witch, began to manifest itself. And that form was an enormous form. She was, apparently her original witch form was like a giant. And she was trying to pull Krishna off her chest, and she was shouting, "Child, leave me! Leave me, leave me." As she's growing and expanding to this magnificent, terrifying witch form, and finally collapsed to the ground. The residents of Vrindavan were astonished. What is this? Where did it come from? It's enormous. Where is Krishna? They've been looking for Krishna, and they see Krishna playing on the top of just crawling around, amusing himself on top of Putana's body, which was quite high up. And so they brought Krishna down from there. Mother Yasoda, she brought in brahmanas. She prayed to Narayana, protect my son. Oh, Nrisinga, I can't remember the prayers. Protect my boy from above. Oh, Upendra, protect him from the east. Oh, Janardana, protect him from the north. She did all kinds of rituals. Put a shield around him so that no demons would be able to injure him, although he's the Supreme Godhead. She doesn't know that. She doesn't realize that. So she's saying all of these prayers to Vishnu for Krishna's protection, asking the Brahmins to bless him, that he will be protected, thinking that it's a miracle that he managed to escape this time, but you never know what the next time would be. So Putana, she's compared to the false guru. Why am I telling the story? Putana is the false guru. She comes in, she looks very beautiful. She looks like Lakshmi herself. She smiles. She looks so kind and compassionate. But inside, she's a demon. And she will murder your soul. Of course, the soul is eternal, but in the Ishopanishad we have the imagery, Atmahana, the killer of the soul. Atmahana. I can't remember the Sanskrit at this moment, the full verse, but the killer of the soul will enter into the realms of the demons, actually. So killing the soul means killing our opportunity for Krishna conscious growth, development, progress, realization, purification, awakening of love of Godhead, perfecting this life, that we can return to Krishna in this life. Someone who has some realization, they come to a Vaishnava guru in that moment that they have realization about the fallacy of this materialistic way of living. They come to a Vaishnava guru, they can surrender to Krishna, they can begin their spiritual progress. But if in that moment they end up with one of these false gurus who take them out into the woods, teach them to go out into the woods and live close to nature and have free sex and alternate out-of-worldly experiences through intoxication, it's a great tragedy. It's a great loss for them. It's a great loss. And then once having had that taste, it's another material attachment. It's another stumbling block. So even after that, if they come to hear Bhagavad Gita, from a Vaishnava, come in contact with a Vaishnava guru. Because they have this one more extra material attachment now, it might be all the more difficult for them. And even they may take up Krishna consciousness for a short period, if they become weak in their practice, then there's one more materialistic alternative for them to fall back upon. So therefore it's a great tragedy. But this material world, Maya's job is to create many different varieties of material enjoyment. So we can reject one and take up the other. That's her job. And so even some of them, they will come under the veil or the guise of spirituality, when in fact they're also materialism. That's Maya's job. That's what she does, and she does it very well. Bhagavatam begins, the very first verse of the Bhagavatam says, Kaitavo dhamo, that is being rejected in this text. Kaitava means cheating, dharma means religion. This Bhagavatam kicks out and rejects all forms of cheating religion. You go to other spiritual texts, you can be cheated spiritually. It's giving you an alternate to the norm, but it's another form of materialism. Or even some spiritual texts, they may even approach the spiritual. They might talk about Krishna, but the end is materialistic. You can approach Krishna for material prosperity. You say this prayer, you do this sacrifice, this yajna, you give that donation, you will become materially very prosperous. That's another form of cheating religion. It's much closer to spirituality than what is being spoken in the pages of the Bhagavatam here today in this verse. But it is still, according to the Bhagavatam's perspective, it is another form of cheating religion. Another form of cheating religion says, you do this japa, you come to participate in kirtan and see Krishna's form, and you can become Krishna. Krishna meditated, he became God. You meditate, you will also become God. Krishna was a man who meditated and realized he was God, like Buddha. You also meditate, you will also realize you are God, you become Krishna. That's also cheating religion. What is it? Appealing to your ego. You can be God. Why be a man, a normal man or woman, when you can be God? In fact, you are God, you just don't know it. Why am I suffering? Because you're an illusion. Why is God an illusion? Well, they can't actually explain that. Inconceivable. Is illusion greater than God? Don't ask complicated questions. So Bhagavatam kicks out all these forms of cheating religion. We are being warned here in this verse to beware of different forms of cheating religion, even in our own hearts. Yeah, okay, we have been critiquing. We have been critiquing other... A little more gentle, yeah? We have been critiquing other approaches. Oops. That may even call themselves as spiritual. But now let's apply this to ourselves. Let's be humble and apply this to our own selves. When we come to Krishna, why are we coming? Are we coming because of social convention to show ourselves as a good devotee? Are we coming to pray for material prosperity? When we preach to other people or teach other people, are we putana? That we want to have power over them? Yeah, we're using Krishna for our own power and our own control over others, our own prestige and position. When we sing kirtan, when we dress the deity, or whatever we do, are we being putana? So, if we're introspective, we might find a little putana in our hearts. We might find a little Ravana who wants to kidnap Sita from Krishna, take Krishna's energy and enjoy it for ourselves. Ravana also dressed himself up as a saru, right? Bhavati Biksham Dehi, he went begging at Ram's cottage while Ram was away. Bhavati Biksham Dehi to Sita. And when she came out to give him alms, he threw away his begging bowl and grabbed her hand and took her to Lanka. So he's also a false saru. If we're introspective, we might find a little putana, a little bhavana in our own hearts. And so why we will use this verse to point out the fallacies of other so-called spiritual traditions, we can also critique our own inner demons, our own superficial spirituality or superficial devotion, and pray to Lord Ram, pray to baby Gopal to destroy those demons, to leave only the pure creeper of bhakti, creeper of devotion. When we sing Hari Ram, Hari Ram, Ram Ram, Hari Hari, we can pray to Sri Ram to destroy that Ravana in our own heart, whatever is keeping us from Krishna, that desire to enjoy Krishna's own wife, Ram's own wife. We can ask Sri Ram to destroy. When we say Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, we can ask baby Gopal to suck out the life of that demon putana that is in our own hearts. So we pray for purification. We're introspective, we're conscious, we're aware of our own conditioning, but at the same time we're also praying for perfection. We're just focused on being purified and free of offenses. That's a positive but negative focus. Now, we also need to focus on constructing, to destroy the material conditioned state, but to grow our spiritual nature. So the more important prayer is to pray for love, to pray for prema. Okay, I'll take one or two questions. Yes, Vijayagaranda Prabhu.
You mentioned all these sort of, obviously, anattas that we have inside of, you mentioned all Ravanas, and obviously we have those, and it's, sometimes it's very hard to face those. And, just how to deal with that, when, sometimes when we realise actually, we are, quite hypocritical sometimes, we're drawn past back to and we're trying, we're even trying to preach to people, but then again, we have so many anattas, we can fall down sometimes ourselves and try to pick ourselves up and like, how do we keep going rather than sort of like just feel like giving up, just feel like
I am Ravana. Just admit it. It's important to be aware, otherwise we delude ourselves and that we allow that Ravana to grow and become bigger and bigger inside of ourselves. And we end up committing offenses against devotees. And we allow Putana and Ravana to grow unimpeded, then we make aparadha against devotees, against the Lord, against offenses against devotees or offenses against Krishna. So we need to be constantly vigilant. Whenever Ravana pops up one of his 10 heads, that Ram cuts off the heads and Ravana grows another one. So to be vigilant whenever that, and to be aware. Just that awareness. Oh, there he is. Oh, there she is. Just that awareness will, an acknowledgement of the problem will, in the sincere devotee, will check their growth and cause them to be diminished. So awareness, along with a prayer to Krishna, to not let that be what's driving me now, not let that be what's motivating me now. You got to look, acknowledge Ravana and Putana, but then cause them to be deflated, and then look to your pure spiritual motivation. Because that Ravana or Putana, it's not your real nature, it's your conditioned nature. Your true nature is as a devotee. So when you engage in service and you see that Ravana or Putana nature popping up as a motive for service or certain behaviors or dealings with others, you check it and you look to your true spiritual nature and find that motive. So it's awareness, self-reflection, introspection, and prayer. That's what we can do. Okay, so we'll conclude here. Thank you all very much. Grantharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Samavita Bhaktavin ki jai, Nitai Gaur Premanandi.